It is 8 o'clock. It's Thursday evening. You're listening to LA Talk Radio, and this is the Writer's Block.
Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
Listening to The Writer's Block with Jim Christina and Bobby Bell, right here on LA Talk Radio.
And welcome back, not that you've ever left. I am, of course, your host, Jim Christina, sitting across from the lovely, vivacious Russ Avison.
Of course.
Who is sitting in for Bobby Jean Bell tonight, because Bobby Jean Bell...
Actually, I'm sitting on Bobby Jean Bell right now.
Because Bobby Jean Bell is in Albuquerque, New Mexico, with the WMA convention. So I am going to give her a little plug for her next week, her concert series, and that is with Adrienne Brannon, a.k.a. Buckaroo Girl. Seats are still available, so call 661-255-7087. And the Writer's Block is brought to you by Black Dog Publishing in Simi Valley, by Out West Boutique and Cultural Center in Newhall, and by Target Freight Management, when they actually have their own ad that they're going to be running here in a little bit. We have Henry Park with us tonight. We also have another author from, I believe he lives in Ohio, and this is going to be fun to talk with him. And what's going on, Russ?
Well, let's see. I want to go back to what you just mentioned about the Buckaroo Gal.
Yeah.
I think I've always wanted to date someone who went by the moniker of Buckaroo Gal. I think that would be fun. And besides that, I have nothing exciting going on. But that added a lot of spice to my evening, just to think about that.
Well, I found out Monday that your allergy index is supposed to be under 115, and mine was 1,596. So I guess that means I'm allergic to life.
I think so. Yeah, but, you know, on Saturday Night Live, a long time ago, they had a news story, you know, one of their weekend updates, and it said, scientists have now proven that swallowing small bits of saliva over a long period of time will kill you. And that's the same thing, you know? It's just like, that's what we're stuck with. Your allergies are there, you're allergic to stuff, and it's out there.
Well, yeah. Well, it's just like the same thing, but, you know, eating or couches causes cancer in laboratory rats.
That's true.
So there you
have it. But they have a good life. They like it.
There you have it. Hey, if you want to call in tonight, the number here is 818-602-4929. And Henry, if you're out there listening, go ahead and dial that phone. If not, I'm just going to get right to our guest. So if the phone doesn't ring in the next 30 seconds, we're just going to go right to the guy that we got on hold.
Yeah. Well, why don't you say a little bit about him? Well, you know,
well,
tease everybody.
Tonight's guest, I'll give you a little teaser. He's a mystery writer. He's got some L.A. Early 1950s L.A. private eye stuff going on. Really fun reads. I have to say that I went through it really fast.
Did you?
Yeah, I did. And it's just really fun to read and really easy to read.
Well, it's easy and it moves quickly. It just keeps you on the edge.
And guess who's calling in?
Uh-oh.
Good evening, Henry. Oop. Henry.
Is he really there?
Yeah.
Just teasing us with Henry.
Henry's there. Where is he? Henry! Here we go. Merge calls. There we go. Henry, you here? Henry?
He got his button on?
Yeah.
Hey. This is one of those times when we go through technical difficulties Jim's just getting old and he doesn't understand all of this.
Oh. Yes. Henry, you here?
There he is.
I'm here.
Oh, hey, buddy, what's going on?
Well, actually, quite a bit. I've got an interesting scoop for coming up for Henry's Western Roundup this Sunday.
Do you?
So yes, I do.
Scoop us. You want to share?
Okay. Production on Westworld has abruptly shut down.
Really?
Yes. Well, you know, we've been hearing for a lot more than a year about Westworld, the HBO sci-fi Western,
right,
based on the 1973 movie from writer-director Michael Crichton, produced by Saul David. It's about a resort where people pay a lot of money to live out their fantasies in various eras, including the Old West,
mm-hmm.
in a town peopled by human-seeming robots who are programmed to cater to their every wish. I understand in this version they get catered to a lot. The original movie starred Richard Benjamin and James Brolin as tourists and Yul Brynner looking exactly as he did in The Magnificent Seven as
right.
a robot who develops a mind of his own and won't let the humans outdraw him anymore. Well, with the new version, they've been very quiet about it, so I don't know how close they're sticking to the original plot, but I do know that Ed Harris has the Yul Brynner role, and he looks great in the stills.
Mm-hmm.
The cast includes Anthony Hopkins, Oscar winner for Silence of the Lambs, as a new character, Dr. Robert Ford. Don't know if that's a coincidence that it's the name of the man who shot Jesse James. It features James Marsden, Thandi Newton, Evan Rachel Wood, lots of very good people. They've had Gene Autry's old Melody Ranch locked down tight as a drum ever since Django Unchained left.
Mm-hmm.
And now, originally the order was for 10 episodes.
Oh.
They've shot 7. Then to everyone's surprise, on Monday, I'm sorry?
He brought it in.
That's actually our guest on the other line, so.
Oh.
My apologies, guys. We just caught a mouse.
Not a problem.
Okay.
So the snake will eat tonight.
Yeah, the snake will eat tonight. Okay, continue, Henry.
Okay. Well, so the order was for 10 episodes.
Mm-hmm.
They've shot 7, and then to everyone's surprise, on Monday, the word went out to the crew that they would be wrapping today, Thursday, and they're going to be reworking the scripts for the last 3 episodes and starting production again in January. And it's set to premiere on HBO in February.
Mm-hmm. So they're just going to premiere with 7 episodes?
It's unclear whether they're going to go ahead and do all 10 or not. They, for whatever reason, they feel they need to rework the scripts of the last 3.
So
we're just hoping that this is going to be something that's going to go on more than one season.
Right.
We'll just have to see.
Right. Now, that was the reason we were out in the tent that last, what, year before last?
That's right.
Yeah,
they've been shooting that for like a year and a half.
Right.
It's interesting to note, I had seen the trailer for the HBO series, and I have a young man who was the son of some friends of ours in Mexico City, and he's staying at our ranch because he's going to college locally. And I was telling him about this Westworld, and I said, you've got to see the original. And just 2 weeks ago, we sat down and watched the original. And as much as I really enjoyed it when I saw it, now watching it, I saw how campy it really was. But it was still fun.
Oh, yeah. Well, of course, as effects get better every year, what used to seem very impressive is it gets kind of amusing and cute after a while.
Yeah, indeed.
But now, of course, here's something else interesting. You guys are obviously radio guys by definition, or we wouldn't be talking
right.
on this format. My lead in the Sunday Roundup is about Western radio drama.
Oh.
Now, have you guys listened to the old radio westerns, Gunsmoke, Lone Ranger, Half
Sure.
Devil Travel?
Absolutely.
Oh, sure. Gunsmoke's one of my favorites.
Mine, too. It holds up wonderfully.
It does.
It is such a tough show, very noir.
Yeah.
Anyway, you know, those were called OTR, Old Time Radio.
Mm-hmm.
But my story is about a brand new Western radio series. It's called Powder Burns. It's about an Old West lawman who suddenly goes blind. It's a continuing story, kind of a radio mini-series.
Mm-hmm.
It's a brainchild of a very talented young guy named David Gregory. I think he's 30. And he writes it and exec produces it and he acts in it. And he didn't give himself the lead role. I've got an interview with David where he talks about the show, how he got hooked on old-time radio, and what it's like to create a radio drama from the ground up. And he's been attracting some really strong acting talent. His lead is TV's original The Flash, John Wesley Shipp, who now plays The Flash's dad in the current series. And the newest episode, number 4, he has as guest star the last man standing of the original Magnificent Seven, Robert Vaughn.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, my goodness.
Isn't that cool?
Yeah.
Robert Vaughn on radio. So I'll be posting the interview on Sunday, but in the meantime, I posted a link to episode 1 of Powder Burns on the Henry's Western Roundup Facebook page, so anyone who wants to listen after the writer's block can do that.
Oh, wow. There you go. So all of our fan out there.
That's right. They are excited.
Or he is.
Well, actually, I'm excited about something. I've got something very special happening this Saturday, November 14th,
okay,
at the Autry Museum.
Mm-hmm.
They have a monthly film series called What is a Western? And I've been invited to introduce one of Clint Eastwood's best films, both as an actor and a director, The Outlaw Josie Wales.
Great movie.
I'm sorry?
Isn't it? Yeah.
And it's one of the, it's just not shown much. And here you get to see it on a big screen. It's got a great cast, Sandra Locke, Chief Dan George, Sam Bottoms, John Vernon. The story of the production is unusual. The Directors Guild actually created the Eastwood Amendment to their minimum basic agreement as a result of this movie.
Uh-huh.
And the story of the author and the novel it's based on is just mind-blowingly strange. Anyhow, it starts at 1:30 at the Wells Fargo Theater, and admission is free with museum admission.
Well,
so
there you
please
go.
Come on down and see me.
Well, you know,
and
we
the movie
might do
even
that.
More important.
Yeah, as you see the movie.
Yeah, while you're at it.
Yeah, while I'm there visiting with you, go see the movie. What the heck?
What the heck?
What else you got going, Henry?
I'm sorry.
What else you've got going?
Well, let's see. Speaking of the Autry, last weekend was the 25th annual American Indian Arts Marketplace at the Autry, which is always a fascinating event. They had more than 200 artists representing over 40 tribes, and I spoke to weavers and potters and flute makers about their work, and I'll have what they had to say in the roundup.
Mm-hmm.
Some news on the Grizzly Adams front. In the current True West magazine, the December issue, I write about the 10 best Mountain Man movies in preparation for the Christmas release of Leonardo DiCaprio in The Revenant.
Mm-hmm.
And I talk about the life and times of Grizzly Adams, which starred Dan Haggerty and became a very popular TV series.
Yes, it did.
The rights to Grizzly Adams have been offered for sale for some time, which is weird because he was a real man, not an invented character. But what they're selling is the fictionalized version of him that was developed by producer Charles Sellier. And this week, Abrams Artist Agency came on board to represent all rights. The man behind the move to revitalize Grizzly Adams is Todd Swindell, and he's working with Michael Greenberg, who is exec producer on MacGyver and Stargate SG-1, so they're definite professionals. But you know why they think there is a great appeal to new audiences in Grizzly Adams?
What's that?
The beard and the flannel. Dan Haggerty, as Grizzly Adams, is the man that hipster lumber sexuals are trying to be.
Lumber sexuals?
And the leather pants.
That's right. Exactly. All that suede and fringe. And, you know, the Grizzly Adams franchise brought in over $140 million in the 70s, which, I mean, would have to be twice as much in today's dollars.
I don't even remember how long that was on the air.
Well, it's just two seasons, and I think there were two movies. Oh, by the way, now, I always thought Dan Haggerty was the original Grizzly Adams, but he was the second man to play him. Do you know who was first?
No.
John Huston.
Really?
In the Life and Times of Judge Roy Bean in 1972, 2 years earlier, he played Grizzly Adams and directed it from a John Milius script.
Huh. Interesting. Well, I mean, you know, he's gruff enough, I suppose.
Oh, yeah. Oh, he's very gruff as Grizzly Adams. Much more than Haggerty. You think he's going to bite that bear.
Yeah. Dan Haggerty was too nice.
Yeah. Well, now, anybody who in your listening audience who's in New York, mm-hmm. New York City, there's a beautiful new restoration print of Johnny Guitar that's going to show at the Film Forum for a week starting Friday. Have you ever seen it?
Yeah, that's Barbara Stanwyck and...
Joan Crawford.
Joan Crawford and Stuart
Joan
Granger?
Joan Crawford and Mercedes McCambridge.
Yeah, and it was Johnny Guitar. It was Stuart Granger, wasn't it?
Let's see. The Sterling Hayden is Johnny
Sterling
Guitar.
Hayden.
And Scott Brady is the dancing kid, and of course all the sex roles are reversed, and it's so over the top and weird, but great fun. And you got Ward Bond, John Carradine, Ernest Borgnine, all those great guys.
Right, right.
And it's directed by Nicholas Ray, who gave us Rebel Without a Cause, among a lot of others. I actually worked for Nicholas Ray for 2 days. Back when I was at NYU Film School, I actually got to work with him. All I did was repair torn sprockets. But I got to hang out and listen to all his stories about, you know, making films in Hollywood and Gloria Graham, who I was madly in love with, and he was married to, and his son was married to. That's a whole other story.
So a socket fixer.
Oh. Yeah.
There's a lofty ambition.
Which one?
A socket fixer. Sprocket
yes.
fixer.
Sprocket fixer.
There you go.
Fixer, yeah.
Well, Henry, we got to cut you short. Actually, you've been dealing with this gentleman on with your email today, I believe.
Yes, indeed, I sure have, and I'm very interested to hear what he has to say.
Oh, he's good. Well, actually, if you haven't read his book, when we just finished reading Spyfall, you have to, because it's a lot of fun.
Okay, well, that's right on the top of my list.
And Henry Park, thank you for joining us again.
Well, thanks for having me.
Okay, and we'll be talking to you soon.
I'm looking forward to it.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And we're back, and we're going to run a little ad here, and then we're going to get our guest on the air. So hang with us, and we'll be back with you in about a minute.
Hey, Jim Christina here for all you LTL shippers. Are you tired of your freight being reclassified? Tired of calling several freight companies for the best rates? Of course, and then they reclass you and there go your rates anyway. Then Target Freight Management has a solution for you. Their customized transportation management system protects all of their clients from situations just like yours. So if you're currently shipping a density-based product, you need to call Target Freight today. Target Freight is currently saving their clients between 15 and 20% of their freight costs. That's a huge savings to anyone. They'll even do a free cost analysis of your current freight to see if you're a good fit for their program, and not everyone is. The kicker is, Target Freight is paid only on the contingency they can save you money. Call Target Freight today and just see what they can do for your company. Target Freight Management, 888-653-1323. That's 888-653-1323. Or go to www.targetfmi.com on the web.
And we're back. And if you're just now joining us, you've just missed a great section with Henry Park. But stay tuned, because we got a great guest coming on right now. This gentleman is from Ohio. He's got a BA in comparative literature. He's worked for Exxon, AT&T, IBM. He's been happily married for 45 years. What? Yeah. And we're going to bring him on right now. John, you with us?
Yes, I am off the mute.
Well, good.
Welcome, John.
Welcome, John. And this is John Hagenberger.
Hi. Thanks for having me, guys.
Oh, it's our pleasure. Like I told you before we went on the air, Russ and I just finished Spyfall.
Yeah.
What a wonderful story.
Thank you very much.
I
had a great time writing it.
Oh, well, I'm sure you did, because I've never read a book with so much tongue-in-cheek than that one had. It was just great.
Yeah, I don't see why, you know, all this noir detective stuff has to be, things don't always have to be gritty in a mystery. It can be a lot of fun.
Well, yes, and apparently so, because yours was.
The most gritty part that I found was they kept talking about all the smoking, but then you also kind of snuck in that little bit about, smoking's going to kill you, it's bad. So you kind of got in a more modern message.
Well, I mean, you were absolutely right on that. Walt Disney was a chain smoker, and so was Ian Fleming.
Yeah, this is 1959,
right.
So everybody was smoking in 1959.
Oh, yeah.
Just little eight-year-olds behind the barn door, you know?
Well, we didn't have barns, but, you know, we had racetracks, so we'd smoke behind a racetrack.
Anywhere you'd get them.
Yep.
Smoke them if you got them. That's
well,
what you say.
It was easy to get them at my house because both my folks smoked.
Well, so did mine, and so did I for a long, long time.
Yeah, me too.
And I was torn when I wrote this because... that's what life was like in 59, and if you watch some of the old TV shows or listen to some of the old radio shows, you know, we're talking before about things like Gunsmoke and Dragnet, they were all sponsored by Chesterfield and other L&M and all this stuff, to the point where you just had to smoke, you know, it was just natural. If I didn't put that in the story, I would have been remiss.
Well, okay, I lost track. How many actual celebrities / stars / prominent personalities in the 50s did you throw in this book?
Oh, wow. Well, there's a little bit at the back of the book, something like the facts behind the
right,
fiction.
Right,
And it's, I guess that gives you kind of a list. Even I have to sit here and flip through the pages to find it myself. But just off the top of my head, I remember weird people. People wouldn't even remember, like Kevin Cochran.
Kevin Cochran. Yeah.
John Steinbeck, Elvis Presley, Boris Karloff, Mickey Cohen's in it. Of course, Walt Disney and Ian Fleming were in it.
Well, and Ed Burns.
I probably left out three others.
Oh, Ed Burns is in it.
Oh, that's right. There you go.
I mean, you pretty much hit them all.
Tony Bennett, Frank Sinatra.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, is this the one where they walked in? I forgot.
Yes. You forgot.
No, I'm serious. There are four others, and there's another short story coming out in about 2 weeks in an anthology. And in that one, the main character, Stan Wade, meets Rod Serling, among others.
That'll be fun.
Kind of a story.
You've got him driving a 1953 Kaiser.
Yeah.
I mean, how do the people even know what the Kaiser was?
Well, it sounds like you might.
I do.
And part of my marketing strategy for all this stuff was that... I grew up, and I was in L.A. in 1959. My parents took me on a road trip back when the freeways were just being built. And we went from Columbus, Ohio, drove all the way west, saw the Painted Desert and Petrified Forest and Grand Canyon, etc., and spent a couple of weeks in L.A. and, of course, visited Knott's Berry Farm and Disneyland and, Pacific Ocean Park?
Right. P.O.P.
P.O.P.
Yep.
So I had all this experience, and then when I retired from all those big corporate companies you mentioned, I started remembering those good old days.
Uh-huh.
And then I began thinking, you know, there's probably an awful lot of people my age just like me, and they would like to go back there if they could, too. So I started writing stuff to kind of do a time travel trip back.
Wow. You did a good job, because that's the stuff I remember.
Well, that's great. Thanks. Yeah. I'm glad to hear it.
I remember all the old Kaisers and the old 53, 54, 55 Studebaker Bearcats and,
Or DeSoto.
And one of my very favorite cars in the whole wide world is the 1959 Thunderbird.
That was a beautiful car.
Yeah. Oh, you say you nailed it. You nailed it.
And it's what, Robin Egg Blue?
Yep.
And yeah. I think, his girlfriend, Susie, wasn't she driving was it a Rambler?
No.
A Renault.
That's right.
A Renault, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I had to bring in one of those little foreign goofy cars.
Yeah.
From 1959.
Because a Renault at that time, all it was a Renault Dauphin.
Yeah, the Renault Dauphin. Right.
That's correct. So where did you get this idea? Because it's such a great idea. Where did you come up with it?
Well, the basic idea is Los Angeles, 1959, and I just told you the idea I went there as a kid and wanted to kind of go back to it again. But I like Private Eye detective stories. I've got two other series with private eyes in them, and the one that I really liked was the one that I grew up with when I would see things like 77 Sunset Strip and Peter Gunn and that stuff on television. And those shows are pretty much available these days, so you can kind of, again, time travel back and see all this again. But that's what it meant to be cool when you were 11 years old or 10 years old. And that image always stuck with me as what, but I always wanted to, I guess, go back in time and visit it all over again. The idea of 59, I was 11 years old, and that's when everything just sort of clicked for me. And the magic of traveling across the country and visiting this other strange world called Los Angeles was a real big influence, I guess, on my thinking as I grew up.
You hit the nail on the head talking about a strange place, Los Angeles.
Exactly. Exactly.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, we were lucky if we had any kind of amusement park. And... wow. I mean, when you're a kid and people ask you, what do you want to be when you grow up? Maybe you want to be a cowboy because you see them on TV. Well, there I was in the old West, so to speak.
Right. And
maybe you want to be a private eye because you see them on TV. There, you know, here we were in L.A., private eyes. But then maybe you want to be an actor. Well, Hollywood, man, you know. So everything just sort of coalesced right then and there, including, you know, you want to be a
You want to be a spaceman? You want to be a, you know, so the next thing you got is Edwards Air Force Base, and you got NASA starting up there, right? All right there, 1959. Big time, big place to be. So that's the setting I wanted. It basically is a character.
Right, right.
The novel.
I have to tell you that my wife's father worked at the Skunk Works.
Okay, well, so did Stan.
Yeah, right.
Stan being the main character.
Stan Wade.
In fact,
correct.
That's probably a good time. Why don't you give us a little thumbnail background, what the story about what the book is, and so people will know what we're talking about.
There you go.
Well, the book, it's called Spyfall. All the books are called something like Stormfall or Superfall or Starfall or whatever. They all start with an S, and they all end with the word fall, because it's like you're taking the fall.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or we got to have a fall guy, you know. So in this particular one, he gets hired. He's just an out-of-luck kind of a PI who's inherited an agency from a previous PI from, let's say, the 40s. And he works out of the back of the Brown Derby restaurant in a crummy little office where he occasionally works kind of as a bouncer or an enforcer to get people to pay their bar tab. He gets different cases from different walked-in famous people. It might be George Reeves, or it might be Alfred Hitchcock.
Frank Gorshin.
Right, I was just going to say that he was in this one, right?
Or Frank Gorshin, yeah. I really wanted to do Gorshin, hoping that people would remember him, and I'm glad apparently it clicked for you.
Oh, absolutely, the Riddler.
Yeah, the Riddler, exactly, which is why the irony is that this stuff all kind of clicks, and believe it or not, and the reference at the end of the novel about Frank Gorshin and a part that he got in a film right then and there on those specific dates, we're talking in this case, if I remember right, Spyfall is by June, July, I think, of 59, he got a part in a film where it was some episode called The Last Laugh. This is before he ever played the Riddler. What a strange coincidence, you know. And I find all sorts of these oddball coincidences, and I string them together and link them in as if they were meant to be. And it makes for good entertainment for me and good entertainment reading, I think.
Yeah, it was.
But anyway, Stan gets hired, and he goes on the case to help out his number one client, Walt Disney. He's hired to kind of check in on a visiting author, Ian Fleming. He chases that around for a while and even goes as a sort of a bodyguard to Jamaica, to Fleming's estate there, Goldeneye. And some threats have occurred from some previous things that have happened to the point where they have to go to Europe and they have to go to Berlin. And this is before the Berlin Wall. And they have to deal with some circumstances there that are true, honest-to-God facts, about a missile crisis before the Cuban Missile Crisis mm-hmm. ever occurred that hardly anybody knows anything about. And there's some internal things that are happening in his life about his parents. We've talked before about, you were mentioning Lockheed mm-hmm. and Skunk Works and stuff. So there's just all sorts of stuff going on in this particular adventure. And the most fun for me is the walk-ons, the cameos. Finding ways. For instance, there's a walk-on by Boris Karloff, mm-hmm. and he literally was there at that place at that time, which is very difficult for me to do the research, but once I get it down, I find myself saying, oh, I got to put this in a story,
mm-hmm.
which is what I did in this case.
Didn't he give Howard the cane?
Yeah, the sidekick character, Norman. Norman gets wounded. And gets Boris Karloff's walking cane.
Right.
Kind of as a reward.
Yeah. It's...
And that was, I wanted to tell you about that because that was a real jape for me because at the time I thought that was just a fun, clever little bit of business,
mm-hmm.
a walk-on cameo. But when I got to the end of the novel, as you probably know if you've read it, of course, that becomes a hell of a lot more important than
right.
anyone ever would have thought. And the interesting thing is that when I got to the end of the novel, I really didn't know what I was going to do for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And then it hit me, and the cane became something a lot more than just a funny gag thing from Boris Karloff.
Mm-hmm.
To me, that's
you talk about writer's block. This is writer's shock. Because I go, oh, wait a minute. And I love doing that kind of stuff. When that happens, that's the payoff for me.
Let me ask you,
for free.
Part of the story in the beginning is that Stan gets involved because the mafia is trying to keep their reputation out of the movies. And
yeah.
I didn't remember hearing about that, but was that really true, that they wanted to keep everything clean so
yeah.
that nobody felt bad about the mafia?
Oh, of course. Well, it isn't so much that they wanted to appear to be angels, but they wanted the spotlight shifted onto something else. Don't shine it on us. Don't be making movies about us. The whole reason that Fleming had Spectre. Oh, wait a minute. I'm trying to remember what I know about James Bond. I think originally James Bond was fighting against the Soviets.
Smersh.
No. Yeah, it was Smersh. Yeah. But then it turned into Spectre.
Right.
And it turned into Spectre right around the time the events of this book would have been written,
mm-hmm.
which, if I remember right, is Thunderball. And the reason that Fleming stopped doing Smersh and went over to this idea of international crime, Spectre, almost got him in trouble, because the mafia kind of looked at that and said, "Are you talking about us?" And he said, "No, no, it's international. It's not the American
right.
gangster."
Right, right. It's not sideways.
Had some trouble with Goldfinger because of that.
It could have been, because Goldfinger yeah. was Spectre.
Goldfinger, as I remember, was more of the organized crime. I don't remember that being, and being, you know, in the U.S. with Fort Knox and stuff. I think that's the one the mafia really said, hey, shine the light someplace else. Stop writing about us. We don't need this kind of publicity. We don't need any kind of publicity.
But they had that much influence in Hollywood?
Oh, I'm sure.
Well, you know, they tried to break in. They tried to get all of the projectionist unions. They tried to break into all of those.
Really?
And
I thought they did that with almost all of the...
And they stopped them cold.
Oh, okay.
That's why the mobs never really had a big foothold in L.A.
Well, I heard also that that's one of the reasons why Disney was working for the FBI.
I think you're right. At one time he was. But he also worked for the government during World War II.
Well, correct. We're talking 1959 after the war, of course,
right.
but he was still working, I think, for the FBI, even up until the 60s, sort of clandestinely.
Well, he was kind of a great guy.
One
of the things I like to do with these books is uncover some of those myths
mm-hmm.
and play around with them,
mm-hmm.
Stretch them a little bit. For instance, the next book that's coming out... has to do more with an astronaut, the eighth astronaut in the Mercury 7 program, who was murdered. And Stan Wade, my detective character, has to go find him and figure out who done it.
Hmm.
And the one after that, Starfall, that's, you know, George Reeves, the guy that played Superman
sure.
on TV. Yeah, okay. Everybody argues, you know, did he kill himself? This is 1959, that's when it happened. Or maybe he didn't. Maybe somebody killed him. You know, maybe the mafia. You know, but in Starfall, what you find out is he's not dead.
Ah.
He's in the witness protection program.
George Reeves.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, where's he living? Come on, come clean.
Well, I can't tell you. But if you read the book when it comes out, you'll be able to pick up on most of the information you want.
I also noticed you made mention of the. The theory that had been flying around about the Ben-Hur film and the stuntman being mm-hmm. killed in the chariot race.
That's right.
And actually, after I read about that in your book, I went back to do a little research to find out
so
if that really happened.
And
what I found out is that actually there was not anyone killed during the making of that, but there was an earlier version of Ben-Hur. And there was a stuntman that was killed during the making of that film, but in a completely different way, and it was never used in the
right.
Right. In the
That's
film.
The 1925 version. And yeah, a guy was crushed by a falling pillar or
yeah,
something.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah. But, you know, in the 59 Ben-Hur, Joe Knute survived the trampling during the the chariot race.
Mm-hmm.
But in my story, and the myth in Hollywood always was that somebody did actually get killed and the studio hushed it up. I used that as part of what's in Spyfall, and I used Joe Canute a little bit later in one of the other books as well when they're making the Alamo in Brackettsville, Texas.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
Stan gets to go there and meet John Wade and John Ford.
I did catch you on one thing.
Oh, yeah.
And okay. I'm not. And this is not critical. I just found it amusing. You used the term skyjacking, which did not come into being until 1970.
You know, I remember that, and I'll have to check on that, because my actual wording of the sentence where that word appears might be open for new interpretation. Or someone just sort of suggests that maybe, you know, it was sort of like, you know, some kind of a skyjacking or something.
Uh-huh.
So, in that, yeah, I'm very careful about a lot of these details.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it doesn't mean I can't slip up, and in your case, I probably did slip up.
Well, that's okay.
My recollection was that I was aware of that enough to try to soften it to avoid that accusation.
Right, right. I have to run another ad, so hang with us. We'll be back in about 30 seconds.
Roger.
Hey, Jim Christina here for TFM Truckload, a division of Target Freight Management. TFM is here to help you with all of your truckload and railroad shipping needs. So if you want a reputable company who is going to work hard to find you the best rates while maintaining award-winning service, TFM is who you need to call. When TFM Truckload books a truck for your company, it shows up 100% of the time. If you want a reliable truckload broker, then you need to call TFM Truckload today, toll-free at 1-844-653-7789. That's 844-653-7789. Or catch them at www.targetfmi.com on the web.
And we're back. And if you're just now joining us, we have on the phone John Hagenberger, and he's we're discussing a book that he just released in October called Spyfall, and it's a great read. It's a good romp, and it's just a lot of fun. Just a lot of fun.
There's two things, John, I wanted to ask you about. First of all, comment. First of all, the book, as you read through it, I don't think you go through more than three or four pages without something exciting happening. It just keeps moving and moving and moving, and there's never a time when you say, oh, can we get through this dialogue? It's, you know, this part. It just keeps going, and mm-hmm. it was very fun. And the question that I had completely zapped out of my brain, so I'll have to come back to it.
Was that much fun?
It was so much fun.
I like stories that move like that, and to be honest with you, as a writer, I'm actually trying to temper that a little bit.
Really?
There's some emotional moments that I like to try to get into a story as well, and unless you think, you know, it's fun when somebody, you know, is depressed, or fun when they go to a church or a funeral. Those kind of moments, I think, are just as powerful and just as worth reading, I guess,
mm-hmm.
as the fight scenes. But more than anything else, I think it's humor. There's action, there's intrigue, there's plot twists. There's always something going on. But I like to have fun and maybe play with the words and the way I describe it, because I think a lot of people who read Chandler, at least, like the lyrical quality of his writing,
mm-hmm.
and I'd like to, you know, emulate some of that as often as I can. But I also think that those somber moments are kind of moving as well. So I'm trying to work on having those in there, but not having the book be down or depressing in any way. So thank you for the compliment, though.
Oh, certainly.
Appreciate it.
I have a question for you, John, but first... This is a writer's block very first. We're going to run a little contest tonight. The first one to call in will get a free, 100% free, autographed copy of Spyfall directly from the author. So the number you want to use to call in is 818-602-4929. And believe me, this was John's idea. So here we go. 818-602-4929. 4929. The first caller gets the book. Now, here's the question. The name of the show is The Writer's Block. Did you ever have writer's block?
Yeah, but I have five books out this year, and I'll probably have another eight out next year. They're already sold, they're already written. I don't know anybody that's ever done that, even Stephen King, right?
Yeah.
And the way I did it was that I didn't try to sell or market any of these things until I had them all written.
Mm-hmm.
So I was very patient. I could rethink them and rewrite them and re-outline them, whatever it took, for decades. So writer's block, I suppose, but I was never pressuring myself to a deadline. I never had a case where I had to come up with some sort of 2 pages a day or whatever. So it was casual enough and careful enough that I never ran into a block.
So this always been fun for you. It's always been fun, almost. When did you write your first book?
Well, the first book came out in 88, I think. But that was a nonfiction.
But when did you actually start writing that?
That one actually was around 1987.
87. And when did you retire from your corporate world?
Oh, just last year.
Just last year. So this was kind of like a side hobby that you were doing all along.
Exactly.
Ah.
Yeah, precisely. So that way I just would noodle with it and come back to it and write some stuff and have some stories published here and there or do a newspaper column for the entertainment column in the local paper. I mean, I was always doing some sort of writing, marketing, and that sort of stuff. But the books were always percolating and building up over time until the retirement came, and I said, okay, now let's go start that new career, if you will. And so there wasn't any real block. It was just waiting for publishers to take the time they needed to read through the manuscript and decide whether they want to publish it or not.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know,
and that was the last year. So around March, everything started clicking.
Well, you know,
since then I've had total of 13 books sold and about 5 short stories.
That's amazing. That is really... Jim and I were talking just before the show that we both thoroughly enjoyed this book, and then we thought, what a great film this would be, having Walt Disney as one of the main characters.
Right, right.
You're supposed to say, yes, I'm ready to sell it now.
Yeah, I'm all for it. I think all the books in the series would make, I don't know about good movies, but they'd make good TV episodes, maybe, you know. But I just like the idea that you can go with a character in a place like Hollywood where everybody's heard of Dean Martin or everybody's heard of Bobby Darin.
Mm-hmm.
And you can walk down the street and you can run into one of these people at the, what do you got there, Vons or Safeway or something?
Yes, we have Vons here.
Yeah, so it's possible. So why not have your private eye in 1859 experiencing the same sort of thing, except his clients don't want him to talk about this stuff. They mm-hmm. don't want him to reveal what he's learned. So these are like untold tales, I guess, of Hollywood, in a way.
Huh.
And he gets to bump into all sorts of folks and get into all sorts of trouble, and then nobody ever knows about it except for the readers of the books. And maybe his best friend.
His girlfriend.
They're sworn to secrecy. Yeah, his girlfriend.
Susie
Sunset, right.
Susie Sunset.
That's not really her name, is it?
Susie Sunset. No, that's her name. Sunset Investigations, yep. She married another private eye who mysteriously vanished on a case, and that's in another novel. But he was Johnny Sunset. He was, in fact, the archetype of 77 Sunset Strip detectives. You know, they suit and tie and handsome and combed hair like Cookie.
Right.
And Cookie Stan is not like that at all. Stan is just sort of a, you know, a guy trying to make good and trying to make a buck in the business. And he always had a crush on Susie, and she married this big, polished, super private eye guy with an office and a secretary and receptionist and then he mysteriously vanished.
That would be like in the Rockford Files, the private eye that came in from Hawaii, Lance White, who was Tom Selleck.
Yeah. Yeah, think of it. It's the same pattern. Lance White was always winning the girl and always solving the case, you know, and always having the brilliant ideas and didn't have to work at it hardly at all.
Right.
That's what those private eyes were like on television.
Exactly.
Until Cannell came along with Rockford. You're right.
Right. And Rockford was like so realistic, it was uneven funny. It was this great show.
Yeah, there's been some comparisons made with Stan Wade and Jim Rockford.
Right, right.
In fact, I'll go on record telling you the one I just finished has a flashback to 1950. Stan Wade has been hired by Dashiell Hammett to find a manuscript that has been stolen. And part of the investigation back in 1950, when Stan is just starting out, takes him to Paradise Cove, where there's a trailer camp, and there's a guy there, a trucker, and he's got a son named Jimmy.
Rocky.
Yeah. I that's the other part of what I like doing on this stuff, too. There are Easter eggs and hidden stuff in this book. I know you guys sound like you've caught a lot of the in-jokes and things and stuff, but I guarantee you there's probably seven or eight. I'm not saying you got to go back and reread it and you'll find more stuff. but some people will lock onto some stuff, and some people,
right.
You know, like if you like the car, that's cool, you know. But some other people will get all excited because he went to, where'd he go, the Biltmore? Yeah,
yes.
This one. He's at the Biltmore. Well, that's a big deal to some folks, you know, and other folks, he went to Golden Oak Ranch? Wow, that's a big deal to some folks, you know. And other folks could care less. You know, they're more interested in the fact that John Steinbeck walks on or something, or Errol Flynn shows up, right?
Yeah. Then he died of a heart attack 2 years later.
And I just remembered, I even have Peter O'Toole stop for stop.
Yes, sitting with Ian Fleming.
Yeah, and these are all legitimate, possible. These all, I mean, I researched where these folks were at those dates and time. All of the Stan Wade novels right now are all in 1959. The one you're reading, I think, is June, July. The first one was back in March. The one with Rod Serling, I just told you, that's a short story. That's Halloween. So that's October. The one I just wrapped up is pretty much year-end, and we get finally to 1960. And in that one, that's Spadefall, the one with Hammett.
Mm-hmm.
But there's also Hitchcock and Hawaii.
Wow. Well, John, I hate to cut you short, but you need to give out all your information, your contact information. And if you would, please, you don't need to give us your phone number because I don't think anybody...
Because we're going to put it on the Internet.
We
anyway.
Are going to put it on the Internet. So, but if you would, email and Facebook and...
Where we can find the books.
Where you can find your books.
Okay.
So,
one, two, three, go. My name is John Hagenberger, and if you've got that, you got just about everything you need, because my website is johnhagenberger.com, and if you go over to Facebook and type my name in there, you'll get to my Facebook pages, and you'll get to Stan's Facebook page, Twitter handle, same thing. If you go to Amazon, you type in my name there, boom, all my books will show up there, same thing with Goodreads, Barnes & Noble.
Mm-hmm.
So the key is JohnHagenberger, all E's. Oh, and I got a couple of contestants for a book giveaway I need to announce, too.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, I had a couple of folks. I told folks if they signed up for my newsletter off of my webpage that I would pick two out of a hat, and I picked two out of a hat, and the folks that are going to get it are Kim Ellis and Ben Molden.
Oh, cool.
So I'll be mailing those out to those folks. I also told them that I would announce their names on the air live on your show.
Well, you did that.
We just did it, yeah.
Yes, cool. You did. And we've got to go. I've got some announcements I have to make. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you both.
It's been great having you on, and we loved your books, and just keep them coming. Just keep them coming.
I promise.
John, thank you so much.
Again.
It's been a pleasure.
Thanks, John. It's been really fun having you.
Thank you very much.
Okay,
take care.
Bye.
Mm-hmm,
bye-bye. And it's John Hagenberger. And good guy. Good guy. Great writer. Good books. Just all kinds of fun. I wanted to talk a little bit about Black Dog Publishing, one of the sponsors of the show. And Black Dog Publishing is in business strictly for young first-time writers. that are kind of confused as to how to navigate the system, how to format books, how to get their copywriting done, how to get copy or the editing and the proofreading done. And so that's why we're there. The website is www.blackdogpublishing.co. The phone number's there. The email is there. Give us a call. Give us an email. If you have something that you're writing and you want help with it, just give us a call. We're really, really cheap. We weren't cheap. We were giving for a buck. No, not that little. But we're very, very, very reasonable as far as money goes. That being said, Russ, I want to thank you for coming in with me tonight.
As always, Jimmy, thank you.
Oh, man, it's been fun. Next week we have Troy Andrew Smith. He's a musician, screenwriter, novelist.
I think he's coming in to studio. He's
going to be in studio with us next Thursday. And, of course, next Thursday is Bobby Jean's concert series. And we have Buckaroo Girl going to be there. So give them a call.
Buckaroo Girl.
Buckaroo Girl. Yes. Give them a call. And let me get that number for you. And let me see. It is 661-255-7087 for tickets. And I believe there are lots of tickets left, so make sure you get those. Oh, of course, you can go after you listen to our show. So that being said, Russ, good night. Everybody, good night. It's been fun. ¶¶